1. We can get started. So we started the sugya of brachos, you know, which brachos and when and how we recite on Hadlokas near Chanukah. And the basic summary of it was that there's a possibility of reciting as many as 3 brachos on the first night of Chanukah. And that would mean the bracha of Lahadlik, the bracha on the Re'iyah, which is Shasa Nisa, and finally the bracha of Shechayanu. We had a long discussion yesterday about Shechayanu. Just to review, we wanted to know whether or not Shechayanu could be generated by the day itself, or it's only the Hadlaka that generates the Shechayanu. The Gemara asks, how can we say Asher Kachanu Tosef Tzivanu on a mitzvah derabbana? Nowhere in the Torah does the Torah command us to light Ner Chanukah. The Gemara offers 2 answers. Then we went on to discuss the case of Erevin. In Erevin, we find that we have a kula that Dmai could be used for Erevin. Normally, we don't use for an Erev something that's not royal achila, it's prohibited. But in the exceptional case of Dmai, we're allowed to use Dmai for the mitzvah of Eruv. And the question is, why is Dmai considered something that's royal achila? You know, that doesn't seem to make any sense. So we suggested that Dmai is not really tevel. It's a separate chumrah that the Rabbanan imposed to be mafrish chuma and maser from Dmai, or maser from Dmai. So that separate chumra doesn't even generate a bracha. It's very interesting that we don't make a bracha on Afrasha's Dmai. So this leads us to the sugya for today, which starts with Omar Rav Huna. So if you're counting up from the bottom of the daf, it's about 10 lines up. The first word in the line is Lezilzuleba. So we're starting with the 2 dots, Omar Rav Huna. Everybody have the place? Yes, no, maybe?
Yes.
Okay. Chatzer sheyesh lo shnei psachim. We're talking now about a house that's situated inside a chatzer, inside some sort of a courtyard. And there are 2 ways of going from the chatzer into the house, or 2 ways, shall we say, from the house into the chatzer. So this is very typical of even contemporary life. You could have a house that has two doorways. You know, you have a front door, you have a back door, you may have a side door. And Rav Huna establishes that in such a case, since there are 2 doors that lead into this chatzer, Tzricha Shtei Neros, that this very odd kind of halacha requires not just 1 Ner Chanukah, but 2 Neros Chanukah. We need a Ner Chanukah for each one of the Pesachim, each one of the openings. And the Gemara is going to try to understand why that's so. You know, we have a halacha called Ner Yishubeso, which means 1 candle for each house. But here's a case that because it has 2 openings, it's almost as if Rav Huna is saying, and the Gemara is going to be afraid to accuse Rav Huna of saying such a thing, that we have here 2 batim. You know, the bias is not defined by 1 structure where 1 family lives in that structure, but it's defined by the psachim. And if you have 1 house with 2 psachim, that's considered 2 houses.
Avram would need 4.
What did he say?
Avram would have needed 4.
Right. He would have needed a bunch of mezuzahs, you say, because he had so many openings on all sides of his tent. So Rava qualifies this, and Rava's qualification is going to help shed a light on exactly why Rav Huna requires more than 1 Ner Chanukah. So Rava says the following: Lo Amaran, when does this requirement of 2 candles for the 2 Pesachim apply? Ela Mishtei Ruchos. In other words, let's say you have a house that's situated, let's say from north to south, or east to west. So what you're going to have is, you're going to have one opening on the northern side, another opening on the eastern side, you know, the 2 different, completely different sides. as opposed to a case where you could have two different openings on the same wing, you know, on the same northern side or the same eastern side. And all this is going to lead to some sort of indication as to why Rav Huna requires two candles. Amol miruach achas, if on one flank, on one side, you have two different openings, lo tzarech, he doesn't have to have two candles, all he has to have is one candle. So now the Gemara wants to take Rav Huna head on and try to understand my taima. Why does Rav Huna see in these two psachim two different houses? I mean, it's one house, one home. Why do you call it two different homes? So the Gemara suggests the following. E lema mishum chashoda. So let's say a few words about this concept called chashoda. Chashoda means, the Torah says, v'yisem nekiyim lifnei Hashem lifnei ha'am, that we should always be nekiyim, we should have a clean slate in the way we appear in front of God and the way we appear in front of the people. And the people, in this case, means the onlookers, that spectators that might suspect us. So chashoda means suspicion. And they suspect us of not living up to our requirements. We're not fulfilling the mitzvahs. And there's another concept in halacha which is very similar, but yet different, and that's called maris ayin. You remember that? So for example, if I'm drinking what looks like milk with meat, but it's really not milk, it just looks like milk, so that might be a problem of maris ayin, like cholov shkedim, you know, almond milk or so forth. So the halacha may require that you keep the milk in its original container that has a clear indication what it is. That's called maris ayin. Chashoda is a little bit different than maris ayin because chashoda somehow impacts on the mitzvah itself. Meaning maris ayin is just a harchaka. It means we have to, you know, do whatever we can to make sure that no one sees that what we're looking at is a maisa aver. Chashoda is something that could have, as we'll soon see, an impact on the mitzvah itself. It might change the very nature of the way we do a mitzvah if the mitzvah, the way we do it, seems to mislead the public into thinking that way. He didn't really fulfill his mitzvah. So we have to fulfill the mitzvah in a way that it'll be absolutely clear to the onlooker that we fulfilled that mitzvah. So the Gemara thinks that maybe we could apply this principle of chashada to Rav Huna's statement. And the reason why, if a person would only light on one Pesach, on one opening, the passers-by would look at that Pesach, the second Pesach, and they would see, hey, there's no Ner Chanukah here. So they're going to believe that he didn't light Ner Chanukah. Why? Because they only saw a Ner Chanukah in one Pesach. They didn't see a Ner Chanukah in the other Pesach. They only saw the other Pesach. They didn't see the Pesach where he had equipped a Pesach with Ner Chanukah. And again, all this makes sense in the light of Rava's qualification, because Rava says it's mishtei ruchos. So you have a person who's going down one ruach. You know, he's on the southern side. He doesn't know that there's an Ner Chanukah on the Pesach on the northern side, and therefore he comes to chashada. So now the Gemara is going to analyze this, or shall we say, the application of this principle of chashada to this case of a chotzer sheyesh la shtei psachim. Says Gemara, let's analyze it. Who exactly, which population are we worried about that's going to suspect the balabais of non-fulfillment of the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah? Chashada deman. And there are two. Give me a minute to get my head. He says the following: Ilema chashada di alma. Are we talking about people who don't live locally? Because again, in the case of the local people, there's less of a chashada because they're familiar with his house. But people who come from the outside, that's called chashada di alma. Di alma means these are not regular city dwellers. They come from the outside, so they don't know that this is one house with two psachim. They think that each Pesach is indicative of another house. So they believe that this one house, although it might be one physical structure, really is made up of two different houses. So the Gemara says, if that be the case, if we're worried about the foreigner, again, what I mean by foreigner, I mean he's not one of the Bnei Ha'ir, he comes from a different city, then afilu beruach achas nami liboy. We don't understand the qualification of Rava, because even if there these two psachim are on the same side, let's call it the northern side, nevertheless we could still imagine that we split the bias into two. There's no indication that it's one bias simply because the two psachim are on the same side. If you don't know the house, then these might be two different houses, two different households, you know, occupying the two different parts of the house. And therefore the chashash should have gone one step further, and even Beruach Achas we should have required two candles, one for each Pesach. So now by process of elimination, what are we left with? B'nei Masa means the city, and we're talking about suspicion from the people who live in the city. Well, they know it's one bias. Is there fafilu mishnei ruchos nami lo libay? There's no reason to assume that there will be suspicion on the part of the B'nai Ha'ir, because they know that this is one bias. They also know, again, we're assuming a lot now at this point. Later on, the Gemara is going to backtrack a little, but right now, the Gemara is assuming that they know that there may be many different entrance ways into the one single house. And even if they don't see a nair on one side, they would definitely assume that there's a nair on the other side. So the Gemara seems to say that by the law of the excluded middle, so to speak, the Mimonim Shalchir, we don't really have a solid way of on the one hand justifying Rav Huna as Chashad, and on the other hand justifying Rav's qualification that it applies only on Shtei Ruchos and there's no Chashad on Ruach Achas. If we're talking about people from the other city, then it should be a chashad even on Ruach Achas, because they think that this house has to be divided into two. If on the other we're talking about local people, they know it's one house occupied by one family, then they likewise would know that even though they only see a candle on this, even though they don't see a candle on this side, that there's probably a candle on the other side. But why should we arbitrarily, you know, accuse people and suspect people of non-fulfillment of the mitzvah? So just to finish the sugya, and then Michael, the floor is yours. I just want to get the whole picture. Li'olam mishum chashad adrei masa. We're talking about the people who live in the city. We don't have to worry about people coming from the other city. Maybe because it's not likely that people will come in the nighttime hours, you know, from another city, and they'll start looking and seeing, you know, and checking you out. In those days, again, it's not like today where there were masses of populations that came, your tourists, and people came from city to city on a regular basis. They came at all hours of the night and the day. You know, the society of then was a little bit more quiet down. You know, it was more of a hometown kind of thing. So people didn't generally come in from other cities, and especially not at night hours. So right now the Gemara is saying that forget about it. We can neutralize the element of the B'nai Masa. There's no chashadah for B'nai Masa. We don't have to assume that, you know, we have to organize the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah to satisfy the B'nai Masa who are coming from another city and are there at night, and they're going to start suspecting that these are two different houses. Well, so the Gemara says then the only thing we have to worry about is the B'nai Masa, the local people. Now, we said that the local people know that this is one house. They're not going to suspect that because there are two psachim, therefore it's two different houses. Oh, so what are we worried about? Zimnin d'mechalfi b'hai v'lo chalfi b'hai. They know only that there's one house over here, one household that occupies the house. But what they don't know is that there are two psachim. They go down one particular street, let's say on the northern side, and guess what? There's a Pesach there. They assume that's the main, you know, the main Pesach. They anticipate there should be a Ner Chanukah there at that time of the day, and there are plenty of people in the market, you know, walking in the streets. And lo and behold, there's no Ner over there. Amri, so they come to the conclusion, they say, you know what? I don't believe that he lit a candle on the other Pesach. Ki hechi de b'hai pischa lo adlik, b'hai pischa nami lo adlik. Now here we have an interesting language in the Gemara. I would have said, you know, I would have anticipated the Gemara would have said the following, that I don't know of another Pesach. You know, I only know of this Pesach. The Gemara seems to imply that he knows, the spectator knows, that there's another Pesach. But since the spectator did not see a Pesach on this Ruach, on this northern side, he's going to come to the conclusion that Bahai Pischa Nami Lo Adlik, that he didn't light on the other side. Now, why would the spectator say that? Kishem, I'm going to read to you the Hebrew. Kishem shlo hidlik balabais bepesach zekas kachlo hidlik balabais bepesach hasheni. To the same extent that he didn't light here, he didn't light there. This is a pella, this Gemara. Why should he suspect that if he didn't light on this side, then he didn't light on that side? I mean, the man is a committed Jew, he's an observant Jew, he has the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah that's incumbent upon him, he'll fulfill that mitzvah. If he didn't fulfill it on this side, he'll fulfill it on the other side. The Gemara didn't say that the spectator is not aware of the existence of the other side. On the contrary, the Gemara seems to indicate that he is very much aware of the existence of the Pesach on the other side. But he's going to suspect that if he didn't light on this side, he didn't light on the other side as well. Why is that so?
Maybe not.
That's where I got stuck.
Last year he lived on that side. What if it's a
maybe?
If it's a name,
I don't know. People, what do you say, Michael?
First of all, there's a whole principle of Dan Lekavschut. That's number one.
Right, so you're just supporting my question, really.
Yeah, no,
I'm looking for an answer.
I don't understand.
Yeah, good.
And also, it's winter time, so you can light candles anytime from 5 o'clock, say, in the evening. And the candles are supposed to burn for half an hour. Let's say they burn even for an hour. Right. So you've got from 5 o'clock till 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. What are the chances if somebody's walking past your house that Dafka, it's that half an hour now? Why should anybody even think? Why would it occur to them that, oh, he's not lighting Hanukkah candles?
Right.
What's the Gemara thing?
Right. Does anybody have a solution to this? This is a very strange Gemara. So I'm going to take a stab at it, and you're the jury. You know, you have to decide whether you like what I say. You don't. You know, there's no religious coercion. The Ran says the following, that he lights one candle on one Pesach, on one Ruach with a bracha, and on the second Ruach, he lights without a bracha. Says the Ran, why? Because we have a principle called Chashada. Chashada means don't do something that might expose you to suspicion. That's not a mitzvah. That's an isur. You have to avoid suspicion. Says the Ran, the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah you can fulfill on one Pesach. Now he has to worry about chashada. Chashada is like protecting you from violating the isur of exposing yourself to suspicion. On that we don't make a bracha. That's not a Ner Chanukah per se. The Ran doesn't go a step further. The Beis HaLevi goes one step further, Rabbi Yosef Ben Brisker, and he says that even though we paskin kovsa ein zakuk la, which means that if the candle goes out, you don't have to rekindle. It says the Beis HaLevi, he's got to rekindle it. Nah, the Gemara says he doesn't have to rekindle it. Says the Beis HaLevi, that's not what the Gemara means. You see, that's why we always misunderstand the Gemara. You can't read the Gemara kipshuta. Says the Beis HaLevi, the Gemara means that he doesn't have to relight the candle in order to obtain the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. That he achieved, because kovsa ein zakuk la, and adlokos the mitzvah, that he did. But Lamaisa, in terms of practical reality, he's going to have to light the candle for another reason. And what's that?
Chashada.
What's nafkamina? What does the Gemara gain by telling me, well, he doesn't have to rekindle the light? Says the Beis HaLevi, the Gemara wants to tell us, impress upon us, is that he won't make a bracha when he rekindles the light. Because he's only rekindling the light, b'taras what?
Chashada.
And here the Beis HaLevi is taking the Ran to its, you know, the statement of the Ran to its logical conclusion, just like the Ran says that a chotzer sheyesh lo shtei p'tachim mishtei ruchos, you need a second hadlok on the second ruach. You won't make a brach on the second ruach because it's only mitzad chashad. It says the Beis HaLevi, if the candle, there's only one Pesach, one candle, but it went out, you don't have to relight it in order to obtain the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. You'll have to relight it because of chashada. Many disagree with the Beis HaLevi. They say, well, you already had an Erech Chanukah and they should have seen it, or at least they see that there was a wick and a nair over there. But the Beis Halevi assumes no. If they're walking down the street and they see it from a distance, and guess what? There's no, you know, and not everyone is there from the beginning of Erech Chanukah to the end of Erech Chanukah. So somebody comes a little later. And guess what? From a distance, it looks like he didn't light Ner Chanukah. Says the Beis Halevi, that's also Chashada. Aye, the Gemara says, Ein Zokaklo. Gemara means Ein Zokaklo in order to obtain the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. According to the Man Diomar, who says, Kofsa Zokaklo, you would have to make a bracha, because you didn't fulfill the mitzvah with the first Ner, because unfortunately it blew out. But according to the Man Diomar that we paskin like, we accept the opinion of Kofsa Ain't Zakikla, so rekindle light for extraneous reasons, namely to avoid Chashada, but he won't make a brach. Wait, Rabosei, just give me 1 minute. Comes along the Prima Gadim, and he says, no. In the case of Chatzah Sheyesh Pashtei Psachim, he'll have to make a brach on both Psachim. I'll explain that in just a minute. But in the case of the Beis HaLevi, when he rekindles the light, he doesn't have to make a bracha. Two obvious questions on the Prima Gadim. Question number one. I don't get it. In the case of Chatzah Sheyesh Bo Shnei Psachim, the reason he's lighting on the second Pesach, the Gemara says explicitly, is Mishum Chashada. Chashada is to avoid a losa, that people shouldn't suspect you. Why do you make a bracha on such a thing? Even the Prima Gadim himself admits you don't make a bracha on Chashada in the case of the Beis HaLevi. That's question number one. Question number two, what would the Prima Gadim say in the Beis HaLevi's case? If the Prima Gadim in his case, which is our case that we're learning now, of Chatzah Sheyesh Bo Shnei Psachim, he insists that Mishum Chashada you have to make a bracha, so you make a bracha on both Psachim, then why not in the case of the Beis HaLevi? Why not make a second bracha? The only reason the machayev of this second hadlaka is what? Chashada. But the Prima Gadim accepts that we make a bracha on Chashada. Now, again, Rabbi Mosei, just an emotional statement here on the side. The Prima Gadim, in my mind, is one of the all-time greats of minds of Jewish history. My father told me that in his day, when you learned for smicha and you had to know Yoredeya meant Mechaber, Ramah, Shach, Taz, and Prima Gadim. There was no such thing as leaving out the Prima Gadim. I learned here in the Kol, we learned Nida for about a year and a half, and every single Prima Gadim is like mind-boggling. The man's mind, you can make two Einsteins out of him, the Prima Gadim. So I don't want to make light of the Prima Gadim. I feel emotionally compelled to try to understand the Prima Gadim. And here the Prima Gadim is telling me that although in the case of Kavsa, we're going to have to rekindle it because of Chashada without a bracha. Chashada doesn't generate a bracha. Then he turns around and he says, no, in the case of Chatzah Sheyesh Bo Shnei Psachim, he makes a bracha on two psachim. Again, let me add another parenthetical insert. The Prima Gadim doesn't mean that b'fa'al, in actuality, he's going to make two brachas. It's enough that he makes one bracha, but he can't be mafsik, meaning he's got to go from one Pesach to the other Pesach. I don't know if he does that inside the house, or he has to go around the house on the outside, I don't know. But as long as he's totally focused on lighting both psachim, then he can kill two birds with one stone. One bracha will be sufficient. But let's say, for example, he lit on one Pesach, and then he ate his supper, and then all of a sudden somebody reminded him, or he reminded himself, hey, you know, I have another Pesach over here. And it's a Chatzah Sheyesh Bo Shnei Psachim Mishtei Ruchos, I got a light on the other Pesach. In such a case, says the Prima Gadim, he has to make a bracha. Why? Because Chashada generates a bracha. How could Chashada generate a bracha? And how could Chashada not generate a bracha, according to Prima Gadim, in the case of Kavsa? So in a funny kind of sense, I've just made life absolutely miserable for us. We didn't understand the Gemara, so I added the Prima Gadim, and now we don't understand the Prima Gadim. So Shkach Rabbi Berzon, you know, if you're in the mood for Inui Nefesh over here, you've absolutely succeeded, because we were in a state of Inui Nefesh when we learned the Gemara. Now we have a double Inui Nefesh. What do you say, Don?
No, I'm sorry. Just before we continue, the Beis HaLevi,
yeah.
When he says that you if it blows out. He's still talking about one stocking.
Correct. There's only one Pesach.
Only one Pesach.
Right? And that's the case of the Beis Halev.
Could you clarify this? Prim Gadol, does he say it's because of a Chashada or not?
He can't deny the Gemara. He's just saying that now he has to make a bracha.
But he doesn't say that he's making the bracha because of a Chashada.
Well, I don't remember the exact lashon of the Prima Gadol, but I mean, the Prima Gadol is clearly operating with Chashada. You know, he's not denying Chashada. Michael?
In a way, I come back to my first point, especially according to the Beis Halevi. According to him, therefore, Hanukkah candles should stay alight the whole time that people are walking through the shop. So nowadays, we should have our Hanukkah candles burning for 6 hours. Because otherwise, it's Chashada.
So, Michael, that touches on a whole other sugya, which we did discuss in the past. Whether or not the halacha of Ad Shetichle Regel Man Hashuk is an absolute or it changes in our time. So, for example, there were those who wanted to suggest that it all depends on when the last movie is out. But others say no, you have to light within that period of time. So that has to be taken under advisement. Rabosai, it seems to me, to my limited brain, that the Prima Gadol is saying something unbelievable, a revolution of sorts, that Chashada could change the nature of the mitzvah. It's not like a case of Maris Ayin, where Maris Ayin means, you know, find a way and patch it up and make sure, you know, wear a flag, you know, this is almond milk, you know, it's not cow's milk. That's not going to cut the mustard as far as Chashada is concerned. The Prima Gadol understood that Chashada is fundamentally different than Maris Ayin. Whereas Maris Ayin means find a way of sending out the message. You know, you have somebody who might think that this, that, the other thing, set the record straight for him. In whatever way. And the halacha maybe will come up with different recommendations. Chashada is something objective. And it's not just some sort of secondary wave the flag kind of thing, you know, press a button on your computer and make sure he understands that this is not milk. But rather, it restructures the entire mitzvah. Says the Prima Gadol that if Chashada restructures the mitzvah, then it generates a bracha. If Chashada was only something external, you know, you got to worry and be nervous about the, you know, people suspecting you, so that doesn't impact on the mitzvah, and you'll send a message to them, and you'll find a solution to this problem, and you'll circumvent Chashada, and there's no issue of a bracha. However, if the Chashada is a result or impacts on the mitzvah itself, on the way you're doing the mitzvah, the very tzuras ha-mitzvah, tzuras or let's call it the conditions of the mitzvah, then Chashada changes those conditions and generates a bracha. Are you with me so far? Ad kan? Okay.
How does it do that?
What would you say?
How does it do that?
Okay. So again, what I'm suggesting here is the following. You know, the Encyclopedia Talmudid has about 40 pages called Chashada. So we'd have to go through all these 40 pages, and in each particular case where Shas, where the Gemara quotes Chashada, see how this operates. Right now, we're going to limit ourselves to Chashada in their Chanukah. That's our subject for today.
But Chashada doesn't change the mitzvah. The mitzvah is Ladlich. Assuming you rule that.
But it's going to can change the rules and the conditions of how to fulfill that mitzvah. Okay? So far, so good? Okay. So I want to suggest the following. What defines a bias? Says the Prima Gadol, a bias is defined by Chashada. Let me explain. I have two psachim. Is that one bias or is that two batim? So the Gemara says the nafkamina is whether you'll have to light on both Pesachim or one Pesach is enough. If you define your bias by the Pesach, then you have two Pesachim, and ipso facto you have two Batim. And if you have two Batim, you have not fulfilled your mitzvah if you light in one bias. Mashal amad davar domen. Let's say I have a bias in Har Nof, and I have a bias in Katamon. Where do I light Nar Chanukah? It's a complicated question, but the answer would be in both places. But listen carefully. The reason I'm going to light in both places is because of Chashadah. But the geder, the definition of the hadlaka, is chovas bayis. I now have two batim. That's a simple case. No one would argue against the premise that I have two batim. One is there and one is here. Darn it and done it. You know what I'm saying? But here's a case where physically the construction is one bayis, but the halacha defines it as two batim. You may see it, your naked eye is one bias, but the halacha defines it as two bat. Why would I say such a crazy thing? Because of the Prima Godim. The Prima Godim says, on each Pesach, I make a bracha. It must be, mathematically, that the Prima Godim assumed that each Pesach is a separate bias. There's no other way of justifying the Prima Godim. So the Prima Godim says the following: the barometer, what do I use to determine if these are two batim or not, is the chashada. The chashada then is not really operating in and of itself, if you follow what I mean. It's not the be all and the end all. It's not that alts lichtim chashada. You know, I have to take now a census and find out what percentage of the population are going to suspect me. That's not the issue. The issue is, even if there's one person on the face of the earth that's going to suspect me, that indicates that he's aware of only one Pesach. And that means that as far as he's concerned, if there's another Pesach, that belongs to a different bias. So he only knows of one Pesach. And that Pesach now is endowed with the status, al pi halacha, of a bias. If a guy goes down the other side of the street, he sees one Pesach. He doesn't know that there's another Pesach. As far as he's concerned, this bias has only one Pesach. If he thinks that bias has only one Pesach, then that Pesach is called a bias. So I now have two people walking on two sides of the street. I got Reuven walking down the north side, and I got Shimon walking down the south side. Reuven sees that Pesach, he anticipates a Ner Chanukah. And he's wondering why there's no Ner Chanukah. So I tell him, what are you going to talk about? There's another Pesach. He doesn't know about another Pesach. He's the one guy out of the entire population who doesn't know about the existence of the other Pesach. If he doesn't know about the existence of the Pesach, that's called a Chashada, says the Prima Godim. That defines that Pesach as a bias. It means that Pesach generates its own independent Chiyuv of Ner Chanukah. Now Shimon is walking down on the south side. He only sees one Pesach. He doesn't know about the existence of another Pesach. He starts thinking, why is it that on this Pesach there's no Ner Chanukah? That generates a status on that Pesach of a bias. So we now have a physical structure, says the Prima Godim, with two batim. It's called Alpidin two batim. Where do I see that in the Prima Godim? I see it from the fact that it requires a bracha. The halacha of Ner Chanukah is a bias. Every bias requires. So if you have two different batim in the physical sense in two different parts of the city, that I understand. Das versteht sich. You don't have to convince me that each bias has to be equipped with an Ner Chanukah. But if I have one physical structure, so why do I have to worry about this Joe who suspects me because he went down the south side, and this Joe who went down the north side and he suspects me? Who cares about them? The answer is, because what's at stake is defining the mitzvah of bias, defining the status of bias to generate the mitzvah. If you don't accept that, again, I'm not forcing anyone. Again, as I told you at the outset, there's no coercion here. We don't believe in religious coercion. But I'm just suggesting, if you have a better shot in the Prima Godim, please tell me. But as far as I'm concerned, there's a mathematical deduction here for the Prima Godim. He must be assuming, if he's making two brachos, that there are two batim. The chiddush of the Prima Godim is that chashada will now impact on my definition of a bias.
What about by kavsa?
Oh, but in the case of kavsa, where we cannot create two different psachim and two different batim, there's only one bias, because chashada can only have the power of what? Of impacting on the bias and separating a new Pesach as a new bias to generate a new mitzvah. We only have one Pesach. Here the Prima Godim agrees that you have a problem because Yenim so and so thinks that, you know, that you don't, he doesn't see a Ner. So what does the Prima Godim say? light another Ner Chanukah. But that's not a Ner Chanukah. That's purely a flag that's meant to convey the message that he shouldn't suspect you of non-fulfillment of your mitzvah. But we cannot create a new bias over here because there's only one Pesach. When there are two Pesachim, that's when the Prima Gaon is willing to go as far as to say that each Pesach generates its own status as a bias, and therefore its own chiyuv hadlaka. Ad kedei kach that now I have to make a bracha on both Pesachim, because these two Pesachim represent two different batim. But if I have only one Pesach, then it remains only one bias. Now the halacha of chashad is not real chashad. You know, this is not the genuine real makoy chashad. Because again, according to the Prima Gaon's premise, the real makoy chashad, and again, we have to check all through Shas and see if I can prove this to you, changes the whole structure of the mitzvah. Here, in the case of Kavsa, the Beis HaLevi is right. You know, we have to worry about somebody who doesn't see a nair, but that's not going to change the nature of the mitzvah. That's not going to organize a new bias. You know, he already fulfilled his mitzvah in this bias. You can't tell me, because we hold Kavsa Ein Zaka close. As far as the mitzvah Ner Chanukah is concerned, he was Yotze, already equipped the bias with a Ner Chanukah. There's no room for a second bias.
But for the Prima Gaon is worried that somebody's going to come past your house and see there's no Hanukkah candles. So if I'm in Chutz La'aretz for Hanukkah, I have to come back every night and light my candles here? Or is it really?
I don't know. Maybe yes, maybe no. I don't know. We have to check it out. Again, how far Chashodah goes, I don't know. But all I'm pointing out is that from the Prima Gaon's perspective, there was a question here that was on the table even before Chashodah. Are you with me on this? This is the main point of what I wanted to convey to you today. Even before we got into Chashodah, Yesh l'stapik, as they say in the language of the poskim, you know, let's offer the following suffix. Is one Pesach one bias, and two Pesachim are two batim, or shall we say no? That if it's one bias and it has two Pesachim, it remains one bias. That itself is an issue. You know, for example, you know, today what they do is they make, is everybody familiar with the phrase here in Hebrew, yichidot diur? What that means is that if you own a flat, if you own an apartment here in Israel, and you're not living in that flat, you have your own flat, whatever it is, you want to make big bucks. So what do? So some people are a little bit limited, they'll just rent it out. No. The real entrepreneurs, they know better than that. They split it up into parts. And believe it or not, they get a lot more rent if they split it into parts. So you'll have one Pesach coming in from here, and you'll rent it out to a single guy, you know, for 2,500 shekel a month. And then you have another Pesach coming from here, rent it out to another single guy for another 2,500 shekel. You end up with 5,000 shekel per month. Hey guys, this is embarrassing. I'm not in real estate. I'm the last guy in the world to tell you anything about real estate. But I'm just using it as a mushal, you know, to indicate what I want to say. That you can have one physical structure, but it's really two batim. You know, that's clear in the case where I have two renters, you know, one contract with him on the northern side, and you know, he can only go up to here, and I have another contract with someone on the southern side.
Yeah, I have a problem with, because first you said, Shada defines the mitzvah, right?
And chashad, yeah, it can have an impact on the structure of the mitzvah. Right. That's what I'm suggesting.
So therefore, that generates the concept of bias, and if you have two doors, you have two doors. But now you just said, no, even before you get to chashad, you have the problem of what is the problem with two...
Right, so if we only
so
had...
So like you separated it. First,
no, so what I'm saying, Don, is if you only had, if you're only operating within the framework of the suffix that in and of itself is meaningful,
yeah,
then I would have said, you know what, it's one structure, I don't care how many Pesachim you have.
Okay.
But now that Chashada enters into the picture, you know,
one other question.
You know, invite Chashada. Now Chashada is gonna give me a whole different perspective on what was in itself a meaningful question.
Okay, so the Beis HaLevi, we originally learned, said that that you didn't have to say bracha if you rekindle. But then you said, but Chashada made him change his mind and said, in that case, you
did. No, I made a mistake. Don, what I meant to say was that according to the Beis HaLevi, when we say Kavsa in Zakakla, it means that since you fulfilled the mitzvah, you don't have to make a bracha on the second adlock.
Right.
But you will have to be madlik because of Chashada, but without a bracha. See, there the Prima Gaon says we don't have the flexibility or the luxury of defining this bias as two different bata because it's only one bias.
Right.
What we have in the case of chashon on two different psachim coming on two different sides of the house is that the very fact, if I want a barometer, I need to put my finger on the pulse and determine whether or not these two psachim are two different batim. And the answer is, I'm going to ask the spectator. When he walks down the street, what does he see? And if his answer is, well, I see two psachim, for example, it's on the same ruach, then we know it's not two batim. But if his answer is, I only see one Pesach, and then I ask a guy on the other street, going up the north or the south, whatever it might be, and he says, I only see one Pesach, I have two different people, and each one is identifying a different Pesach. In that case, the answer to our original question is yes, I have two batim up here. So chashad only becomes, in a sense, the backdrop, the barometer to determine if this is one bias or two batim. And again, you'll ask, what kind of a chutzpah, Rabbi Berzin? You have the chutzpah of saying that there are two batim up here? How can you say such a thing? And the only leg that I have to stand on is the Prima Gada who says you're going to make a bracha. How can you make a bracha twice on two adlokas on the same bias? That's a contradiction in terms.
So if you're saying the reason that the Prima Gada says that you make that bracha, second bracha, because of Chashada, then if it goes out, then according to the Prima Gada, you should make a bracha second to relighting it.
No, because again, you already lit a candle in that Pesach. No?
Yeah,
well, you
yeah.
didn't light a candle. What's the case?
But I'm saying is, if you're telling me the reason that the Prima Gadim says, I light the second lighting is because of Chashara and I make a bracha.
Again, can I stop you just right? I didn't say that. I didn't mean to say, if I said that, then I take it back. Chashara is only a barometer. The reason why he makes a bracha on the second Pesach is because it's a bias. Why is it a bias? That's because of chashad. Again, chashad is only the barometer, it's only the backdrop. In and of itself, we have to define, is this one bias or is it two batim? We're going to use chashad to be machriya sakaf, and to determine that this is two batim. But I never meant to say that according to Prima Gadim, because of chashad, I'm going to make a bracha. What the Prima Gadim is saying is that chashad is going to answer a fundamental question about the whole rule and regulation and requirements that govern Ner Chanukah. And once we have a rule that a bias generates a chi of Ner Chanukah, now we have to know, well, what is a bias? And that in and of itself is a valid question that the halacha has to address. Comes along the Prima Gadim, and he understands that since chashad has the power of impacting on the mitzvah, can now determine that there's another bias. Now, if he didn't light in the second Pesach, then he's going to have to make a bracha on that second Pesach according to Prima Gadim. If he already lit in the second Pesach, then if that light goes out, he's going to have to recandle it midin the Beis HaLevi's Chashad, but there I can't generate a whole new bias. He's already fulfilled in that bias because he already lit in that Pesach.
And why I'm still reiterating my own question, you keep saying the bias generates the mitzvah. But don't you have to be in the bias to generate the mitzvah?
Well, that's complicated. I mean, that really depends on the sugya v'achsenoi. Let's just figure this out for a moment. Just give me a second here. See, I'll tell you why it's very complicated, Michael, because when you ask, do you, that's ustedes, you know, let's take the word you, Y-O-U, do you have to be in the bias? What do you mean by you? Okay, it really is complicated. I'll tell you why. Because the Gemara says in the case of Achsenoi that he could fulfill his mitzvah because his wife is lighting in the net. Now, one second. If you means you, if we call it Chovetz Gavra in fancy Briscoe language, then you don't have to be in the bias to be Yotze. But if you means that somebody has to, somebody has to live in the bias.
If nobody is in the bias. That's what I said. My point. If I'm in Chutzlaris, nobody is in the bias.
If I vacated the house.
Yes. Why?
So that's Tzarchiyun. I don't know.
But the
would there be.
Says you have to lie because
why, well, no. The Gemara says there's a din of Chashad. Would the din of Chashad apply if I pack out and I move to Chutzlaris? I don't know.
Why standard doesn't know you're in Chutzlaris?
I don't know. I don't know. But both sides, it's a very profound question. I would defer to the Shulchan Aruch. I suspect, my intuition tells me that it might be an issue of chashad if a person leaves to Chutzlaritz. Chutzlaritz is not a good idea during Chanukah.
Or even if you're in Tel Aviv.
Especially if you miss my shiurim.
If you're in Tel Aviv, you have to come back to Yerushalayim every night to light. I mean,
Could be. I don't know. Chashada. What greater chashada could there be if you're not lighting anywhere? You know, unless you want to assume that the Bnei Masa know that you're in Chutz Lars. You know, I don't know.
Why can't the person living in the bayis? Why does he have to worry about that bystander? That he'll think it's one house and the light over there. Why can't he at the same time say, that bystander maybe thinks that there are two people living in two sections of the building, and therefore that second bystander belongs to somebody else? Why do I have to worry about lighting there?
So wait a second. In the Gemara's half, I mean, you're 100% right. The Gemara says if we're worried about people from the other city, we have to worry exactly about that. That maybe the two people living in the same house, he lives in the northern part of the house, he lives in the southern part of the house, or what it is, and we'd have to lighten two psukim because that's what the outside.
Yeah, the
so the Gemara says, you know why we don't have to consider that? Because the outsider never shows up. You know, it's a non, it's an empty set. Now we're up to the local people. So the local people now, will they consider that it's two batim or not? So the answer is, it depends where the two psachim are. If the two psachim are in the same ruach, then they'll assume that there's one bias and that's it. But if there's another pesach on the other side and two people walking down two sides, you know, two different streets, you know, one's on 6th Avenue, one's on 5th Avenue, each one comes to the conclusion that there's no nerdolk in the bias, then that sets up two batim. That's what I think the Prima Gadim is learning. So again, Rabosa, I think what we gain by this Prima Gadim, even though, as I said before, it's a pretty radical chiddush, is that now we have a new way of understanding chashada, and it's not what we classically call maris ayin. And number two, I think the main victory here that we get is that I don't think, according to the Prima Gadim, we have to go into a deep psychological survey and see how many people will come to this strange conclusion. Like Michael was saying before, you have to be Danis Chaver Lekav Schus. There must be another Pesach somewhere on the other side of the house and he lit over there. We don't have to enter into that. You know, Chashada becomes less of a reality in terms of, you know, checking it out and seeing, well, what's the guy thinking, what he's not thinking, and then we have to do somersaults in the air, and we have to, you know, maybe it should change from one city to another and one religious population to another. You know, you can come up with a million different scenarios. But now, according to the Prima Gadim, Chashada becomes a tool in a very hardcore sense of objectifying the mitzvah. Now the Gemara says, you know what, where do we find Chashada? This is very interesting because I told you before, Chashad appears all over Shas. But this is the sugya. So we were zochet to see the paradigm sugya of Chashad. And the Gemara is going to talk about Peah. Now, in the case of Peah, I have to leave. Now, on a Doraisa level, all I have to leave is one stalk for the Aniyim. But let's say on a Darabana level, Lama Zogi, we have to leave 1/60th of the field for the Aniyim. Where do I leave that? So the Torah tells me where to leave it. The Torah says it's got to be pa'as sodcha, which means that, let's say, if this was your field, right? So you do your ktsira, and you cover this, and this, and then this is the last point, you know, everything is bald, so to speak, because you've taken off everything, but there's one corner of the field. Now, I say by introduction, you know, every sugya is challenging. The challenging part of this sugya peah is going to be what we call lo darshinan taima dekra. That we have a universal principle that the Torah gives us certain conditions in the mitzvah, and we don't ask questions about that. We have no right to try to speculate as to why, if God tells me to blow a shofar that comes from a ram on Rosh Hashanah, I don't speculate about that. The Torah says to blow a ram, so that we have an absolute faith. So the question is here, and again, it's a very challenging question. I don't claim that there's a simple answer to this question, but the Gemara is Doresh time of the Krav. Vos Epis, why did the Torah say that I have to leave the Peah over here? Now, what we're going to try to do in order to obviate this problem of Darshin and time of the Krav, we're going to try to show that the Gemara's answer to this question as to why the Peah has to be the corner of the field, those answers are built into the mitzvah itself. It's not something philosophical, but it's something that's inherent in the mitzvah. I'll try to give examples as we go along. So here the Gemara says the following. What's the source for Chashad de Sanyom Reb Shimon? Bishvil Arba Dvarim, for four goals. Omer Torah, the Torah prescribed that what? Laniach Peah B'Sofa Sada, when he gets to the end of the Sada. Again, the end of the Sada depends upon where he starts. Right? If he can start from the north side and end in the south side, he can do the reverse, the east, west, it doesn't matter. But when he gets to the end of his Katsira, that's called Siyum HaKatsira, then at that point he has to designate a certain part of the end of the Katsira, that Ktsei Sadeh, which is called Peah in the Torah's language. And that's where he has to separate Peah. So for example, if let's say he's halfway through the field and in the middle he decides, oh, that's going to be Peah, it's not Peah. The Torah says that's not Peah. Peah has to be at the end of the field. Four answers to the question. Reb Shimon offers four answers to the question why we have to leave Peah at the end of the field. Number one, Mipnei Gezel Aniyim, in order not to cheat out the poor people. Number two, Mipnei Bittel Aniyim, that we don't want to make the Aniyim wait around and waste their time. Number three, Mipnei HaChashad, that somebody will suspect me of not being Mafrish Peah. Umishum Bal Techale. Bal Techal is the lav, because Peah has both an essay and a los aseh. The Torah says azov, aziva, meaning that's the essay, the positive command to leave the Peah. And then the Torah says los sichle. He's not allowed to completely cut off all the stalks that are growing in his field. The Gemara is going to go through each one of these four, the most complicated of which is Mipnei Mishum Bal Techal, because Lechora, the Bal Techal is not an answer as to why the Peah has to be at the end of the field. Bal Techal means you can't empty out the field without leaving Peah. So that should apply no matter where you are in the field. If he would leave Peah in the middle of the field, that would also obviate, he would circumvent the violation of Bal Techal. Mipnei Gezel Aniyim, says the Gemara. And now I'm not sure if this is the Gemara or the Braisa. Let's assume, for argument's sake, that this is still the Braisa itself, because Reb Shimon has said four things, four answers, and we don't understand what it's all about. So it could be that Reb Shimon himself is compelled to explain his very ambiguous statement. Shelo yireh balabayis shapnuya. The balabayis could decide, he has his favorites. Well, let's say he has cousins who are nebuch poor, and he'd like to make sure that his cousins get first dibs. The trouble with Peah is that it's like what was the game we used to play as kids? Snatch, what do we call it? Snatch the, what was it called, Rabbi Osei? Remember as kids we used to play the game, you put the little beanie bag in the middle, and then, whoever gets to snatch it first. No? You don't remember that? Anyway, that's the way Peah works, because it's first come, first serve. So what he does is he orchestrates it in such a way that he calls in his friends, or his relatives who are near him. Yomar lekrovo ani. Right? He has a close relative who's. By the way, what's an ani? Anybody know? What? Exactly. He has less than 200. All his assets calculate up to and less than 200 zoos. So he tells his cousin, come in 5 minutes, I'm going to separate this as Peah. The other Aniyim are caught unbeknown to them. They caught off guard. So he gets his cousin to get the first dibs, as we said, to grab the Peah. And the Torah wants all the Aniyim to have an equal share at the Peah. So if the Aniyim realize that he can't separate the Peah just when he wants to, he's going to have to do it when he gets to the end of the field. They know exactly where the Peah is going to be. And therefore they won't. Now we turn to Daf Chav Gimel Amud Beis. So if they bit the Aniyim, now imagine if theoretically the Balabais could be Mafrish Peah anywhere in the field. So all the Aniyim are going to be standing on the barristers, on the outside of the field. You're waiting to see when he's going to be Mafrish Peah. they're going to literally camp out, you know, like Woodstock, you know, and sleep overnight, you know, to wait until the Baal Bais decides, you know, because again, it's like the snatch the bag kind of thing, you know, I want to be there first. So that's called Bitul Aniyim. You know, the Aniyim have better things to do at that time, I guess. So, Akshav, you know, the Aniyim are going to say, Akshav, maybe right this second, Meiniach, Baal Bais pay, the pay is going to be designated by the Baal Bais. I got to be there on time, so he's always in alert. Umipnei Chashad, what's the Chashad over here? And again, this is going to impact on the nature of the mitzvah. Shalo yu ovrim v'shavim omrim, you know, passes by will say, Tavo me'ero li adam shalo yiniach pe'a b'sadeh. If he can be mafrish, if he can separate pe'a anywhere in his field, then the passers-by have no clue that he's still anticipating Hafrasha's prayer, meaning they don't realize that he already was Mafresh prayer somewhere early in the game, and they see him going and going and harvesting his field, and they're going to suspect him, Tom Meira, meaning he should be cursed, this guy, because he didn't leave prayer in his field. Now, I'm not sure that the klala here, the ma'ara, is critical. I think the Gemara is just dramatizing it, but what it really means is that the spectator is going to suspect him of non-fulfillment of the mitzvah peah. Just let me finish. But if, on the other hand, we require him to leave what? The end of his field, then if they don't see peah, they can understand he didn't get to the end of the field yet. Again, if he cuts down the end of the field, then that's not already suspicious. Then he violates the law of Lo Sechal.
But if he hasn't got the end of the field, why are they suspecting him anyway?
Because they don't know when it's
because, going to be. Okay, so what? But then,
because again, if he could be Mafresh Peah anywhere, yeah. They don't think that he was Mafresh Peah. They don't see him being Mafresh Peah.
Because he hasn't finished the field yet. He's only halfway through.
Correct. You're asking the old question about Bidan Lekav Schus. But again, you know, they're wondering, this guy had 1,000 opportunities to be Mafresh Peah, 1,001 opportunities. You know, he's been harvesting his field day after day. And guess what? I don't see that he was Mafresh Peah. Where is the Peah? There's no Peah. Ah, you know why there's no Peah? Because Peah is only at the end of the harvest.
Right. Otherwise, you wouldn't have said
it. No, but Rashi says they're seeing him finish. So they don't know that he already did it.
They see him finish, and they don't know that he already did it. Correct. Correct.
They're seeing him finish.
Yeah. Correct.
So has he done it or has he not?
Yeah. Well, again,
he has done it. But they don't know that.
Right. If not for the dinner payoff,
somewhere in the field.
No, the
Yanim
already came and took it.
Oh. Right.
Well, now we get to the fourth reason, Umishum Bal Techale, and the Gemara says, "I don't get it. What do you mean Bal Techale?" Atukulu lav mishum bal techal. In all cases, basically, we're afraid that he's not being mafresh peah the proper way. So, no matter where you require him and where you allow him to be mafresh peah, there's always going to be that same issue of bal techal. Bal techal is not an issue unto itself. Amar Rava, Rava says mipnei amar ramoim. What is this fourth reason? There are Ramayim who deliberately want to violate Bal Techala, and they're not going to leave Peah. They're going to say, you know what, we left Peah already at the beginning of the field, and the Aniyim already came and cleared out the Peah. But if we require Peah at the end of the field, the Ramayim don't have that opportunity. They can't say, well, we gave Peah at the beginning of the field. But let's just summarize, because we're going to have to end now. What do we gain from this whole discussion about Peah? We're not learning Masechta Peah here. But the answer is, we're interested in the third or the fourth reason of Rabbi Shimon, namely Mipnei HaChashada. And we see clearly that even the Torah itself is worried about Chashada. And as a result of this Chashada, you see, what we have to understand is the following. As I said at the outset, we have a rule of Lo Darshina and Taimi the Crow. We don't try to philosophize and speculate as to why the divine being gave us a particular mitzvah. But in this case, what we're looking for is some sort of structural explanation. I mean, after all, you know, Peah could be given in terms of the monetary value that we're offering as a gift to the Aniyim, it could be given anywhere, the same monetary value, you know, the same stalks, whether who cares whether it's from the beginning of the harvest, the end of the harvest, the beginning of the field, the middle of the field, the end of the field. The answer is that if the Torah sets up a particular structure, then there's got to be something inherent in that structure. Why did the Torah say that the Maisa of Hanochas Peah has to wait and be delayed and postponed till the end of the field? And the answer is because that's going to take care of any sort of chashada. And now what we know is that everybody anticipates that the Baal Bais is going to fulfill his mitzvah when he gets to the last corner. So you see again that chashada, and I'm speaking out of the mouth here of the Prima Godim, if I understood the Prima Godim correctly, that the chashada has the power of generating a t'nai, if you will, a regulation or a condition in the mitzvah itself. And if we apply that to Ner Chanukah, then we come to the conclusion that if you have a chotzer sheish lo shnei psachim, and it's possible that somebody sees the Ner Chanukah, you know, he sees the Pesach on one side and there's no Ner Chanukah, he doesn't know that there's a Pesach on the other side. Therefore, structurally and conditionally, we could say he doesn't fulfill the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah until he equips both sides of his house, both ruchos, with a Ner. So we're both say for tomorrow, we're going to really have to sharpen our knives over here, because tomorrow is the sugya called Madura. Madura, by the way, which means a flame that's being fed by many, many different wicks, by multiple wicks, which is the way we fulfill which mitzvah, Rabosai? Avdallah is antithetical to the mitzvah of Chanukah. And we're going to have to try to come up with some understanding as to why Madura is antithetical to Chanukah. Some Rishonim are so baffled by this question that they come up with Mahadran, you know, that really what the Gemara means here is that he cannot fulfill the mitzvah Mahadran because if it's a Madura, so it doesn't relate to each individual member of the household. And at least on a level of, you know, if you would ask me Ner Ishu Beso, I would have said Madura is the best way of fulfilling the Ner Chanukah, you know, like the electric lights, you know, because the greater the Ner, the more they can see it from a distance, and that increases the Pirsumanesh. But paradoxically, the Gemara is going to come to the conclusion that we want a very humble Ner that has only being fed by only one wick, and that's going to be the sugya for tomorrow. Okay then, so I wish everyone a great day, and if you know who to vote for, please let me know too, because I'm pretty baffled.